Good evening. I want to welcome everyone to 9 to 5, the little program we've been running here for the last couple months, where we interview people in different occupations who are either low vision or no vision, who are holding interesting jobs in the real world. I just wanted to announce that tonight's program will be recorded and will be archived for future use if anyone would like to hear it. Hopefully, the recording will be excellent and everyone will be able to enjoy it at some later date. Now, in the past few weeks, we've had people from different walks of life describing their life experiences, their job experiences, and what they're currently doing. Tonight, we have a very interesting guest, Maria from Connecticut, who I suppose you may have heard if you live in the New England area or maybe beyond the New England area, because she works for Verizon Communications, which used to be known as Bell Atlantic. And she has agreed to come on with us tonight and talk about her life and her life experiences, her occupation, or occupations, because she's done many things or several things throughout her life, including being a wife and mother. And I think we are fortunate to have someone like that, like Maria, to talk about her real-world experiences. Maria, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Thank you. And I want to thank you personally for coming on tonight, taking time from your schedule, which I know is a very difficult one and very stressful, and it's a full-time job, along with our other jobs, being a wife and mother. Usually, Maria, I begin by asking my guests where they were born and their early life, and then we'll move into other areas. Could you tell us something about where you were born and brought up? Because people like to know the person behind the voice.
Okay, sure thing. I was born in Puerto Rico in 1948. My eyes were removed in 1949 due to retinoblastoma, both of them. I came to the States with my family in 1956 or 57, and I did not attend school at all until 1958, at which time I attended the School for the Blind in Hartford, Connecticut, called Oak Hill School. And I spoke no English. I said yes, no, and shut up. And on my first visit to school, I learned how to write my name, and so I thought that was a big accomplishment.
So you really started with two handicaps, not having the English as your main language and being visually impaired. Now, when you went to Oak Hill, did you, that is a primary and I guess a high school too. What did you do, what decisions did you make after graduating from Oak Hill? Did you decide to go into college or did you decide to go into the working field? What were your thoughts at that time?
Well, we were very much encouraged to go to college, those of us that were able. Oak Hill School had several, like, you know, tracks, honors and whatever, and those of us that were in the honor track were very much encouraged to go to college, and of course the school was very proud that I was accepted at a local private college here in New London, Connecticut, that had just changed from a women's college to a co-ed college, and the year that I went was 1969, and it's called Connecticut College, and is a very famous small liberal arts private college, and so the school was very proud, and I was pretty proud to be accepted. However, I did not finish. I was studying psychology and child development, two jobs that would have been really hard for me to have gotten a job, even if I had gotten a degree. But what happened was I had a bit of a culture shock when I went to college, because I had been used to doing my own work in Braille with all my books and doing my own reading, because we had our own library and everything. And when I went to Connecticut College, I had to depend on readers. I could no longer do my own reading. and we didn't have all the wonderful technology that we have now. I was not able to do my own research. And so I had a bit of a culture shock, and for the first time, my grades started sliding, and I did not know how to deal with that. I'd been an honor student, and when my grades started slipping, I started getting depressed, and I really had a bad time in college.
Yeah, I remember those good old days that they referred to, but you did have at least the ability. Yeah, as I was saying, those were the good old days when we didn't have computers. Or at least we didn't have access to them. But you did have Braille, and you could read Braille. And while that college experience was probably a little disappointing, there was a turning point there, because what did you do after you left the little college in New London, Connecticut?
Well, my husband saved me in 1972 at my second semester of my junior year. I met my husband in April of 1972. I would have graduated in June of 73. I was so disgusted with college that when he asked me to marry him, I said yes, and I never did finish school. And I had my first child less than a year later, and my second child 20 months later. So I was busy raising them, but I was ready to go to work as soon as they were ready to go to school.
Well, that's not an unusual path, at least as I recall. Many college girls, when I went to college, got an MRS degree, and that was very satisfying. So I don't think that's anything to apologize for. You made a choice, and it worked out fine. You have a family. You have children. You have a husband. That's wonderful. Now, when your children were in school, and when you could get into the job market again, what did you do at that point, Maria?
Well, this is the funny thing. When I was in school, I thought maybe I wanted to be a translator, you know, work at the UN, but of course that never happened. So then I turned my sights on becoming a telephone operator, because I knew that that's something I could do. But I checked into becoming an operator, and it was a no-go way back in 1972, 73. The technology wasn't there. The phone company was not hiring. As a matter of fact, somebody had to die before, you know, anybody else could get into the phone company. So I started looking for work and was very disappointed. And at that time, VISTA work was, the Volunteer and Service to America government grants were out. So I got a job as a VISTA worker at our local Center of the Blind here in New London, Connecticut, that had just opened up. And I did outreach work, identifying blind people in our area and alerting them to services at Services for the Blind, and also raising the awareness level at hospitals and schools of the abilities and needs of blind people. That's what I did as a VISTA worker.
Well, that's interesting, because I've never met a VISTA worker, and I volunteers in Service to America, as everyone knows, which was a program which was quite popular in the late 60s and 70s. And it indicates that when you were disappointed in not finding a job with Ma Bell, as she was called then, the phone company, AT&T, you sort of took the bull by the horns and found yourself a job. How long did that job last, and where did you move on from that point?
Well, that was 2 years, and then the grant ended, and I was out of work. And the next thing I did was I took a civil service test and became a medical transcriber. Yeah.
So another turn in your career, and that was in the New London area, that you're a medical transcriber for one of the local hospitals or a doctor's office?
No, that was right here at the sub-base hospital. The sub-base hospital. We have the Naval Submarine Base here in Groton, New London, and I worked there. But that was temporary. And after a year, they terminated me and did not pick up my option, as some of those civil service jobs are. And by the way, I'm very proud of my civil service clerical score, which was a 94.8.
Yeah, I think you should be proud of that. Not many rate that high. So the that job petered out. What came next?
Well, after that, I tried to get more medical work. I went to our local hospital, and the agency certainly didn't help me, you know. And I couldn't, you know, find any work at a doctor's office or anything like that. So I didn't do anything for quite a while until 1986. This is 1986 when I heard of an opening as a vendor. And I wasn't sure I was going to like food service, and as it turned out, I didn't. But I walked right into a vending stand. It was a 12-seat coffee shop at our local courthouse, and I did that for 6 years.
So you went from a Vista worker to a medical transcriber. And then you help raise your family. Of course, there was critical years there. I mean, in the 70s, your children are still pretty young. And in 1986, you began this vending business, or you walked into that. How was that? How was that part of your life, that vending business?
Well, it was very long days. You know, you had to get in there early, and you had to leave late. And it was all very doable. I had a talking cash register, and that's when I got my first computer. I bought an Apple to do my reports. I had to do weekly reports and quarterly reports and tax reports and all that junk. So that's my first guy. First computer was my Apple, and my husband had to help quite a bit. And he always worked third shift so that he could help me. In the meantime, the kids had inherited my eye disease, and so they, in their early years, had to go to this retinal specialist and radiation treatments and all that, so my husband was always available during the day to take us to doctors and treatments and all that stuff. And also, we had been stationed in Virginia for 2 years, and we came back, and that's when I did the vending stand in 1986 to 1993. But the job was doable, except that I didn't really like food service because of the perishable, you know, and how you, when food didn't sell, what are you supposed to do with it? And I had a lot of competition because we have a lot of fast food restaurants right here all around the courthouse. So it was not a job that I liked, but I did stick it out for 6 years.
What do you think you took away from that vending stand experience? Certainly one thing was that it introduced you to technology and computers, but beyond that, what do you think you got out of it?
Well, I got a lot of customer relations, a lot of service, customer service experience. You know, you have to be a salesperson, you know, and you have to have personality to deal with the people. And I think people, you know, like me, and I like them, and I got to deal with from prisoners to judges, you know, so I got exposed to a lot of different kinds of people, so I got to deal with a lot of different kinds of customers. And also, that was the year that the wood chipper trial came on, that the pilot that killed his wife and put her to the wood chipper, and that got me a lot of business that year in 90 or whatever, 91 or 90.
Oh, was that case in Connecticut? I forgot that. I forgot that sinister case occurred down there. Well, up to this point, you've tried different up to, well, let's say you got in 86, so you got through with the stand business in 92. So up to 92, you'd had a variety of jobs in the home, out of the home. You've worked with people. Do you think all of that prepared you for the next job that we're going to get?
Absolutely. I really believe that my computer, my little computer, Apple computer, helped me a lot. And because I was able to tell them that I had keyboarding skills, and I was able to tell them the phone company that I had customer service experience. But also, I have to tell you that from time to time, I would call the phone company to find out, you know, about openings, and again, nothing ever happened. I kept on calling affirmative action, and nothing was ever happening. So I stuck with the vending for till 1993.
Okay. So there was a long string there of rejections, trying, being rejected, not succeeding in getting out of the vending business, which you, by that time, of course, were tired of. And then a break occurred. Tell us about how that occurred with Bell Atlantic. I guess it was called that then, or Bell. No, it was called New England Bell, I guess, or New York Bell, was it? Whatever.
Well, I should tell you that in the meantime, there was a strike at my husband's job, and my son, who already had one kind of cancer, got a second kind of cancer, and I was going through a very bad period because he required a lot of treatments, and we almost lost him, but God was with us, and he survived his second cancer, lots of chemotherapy. But I was very, very depressed, and I just could not deal with a job that I didn't like. So in 1993, I left the food service, and I was looking for work until 1995, but I didn't. For 2 years I was without work, but I bought an IBM computer and taught myself how to use the IBM computer. That's when I got rid of the Apple, bought an IBM computer, and spent a lot of time teaching myself how to use the IBM computer. And then one day in 1995, my daughter says, "Mom, SNET is hiring operators." So I called up and asked for an application and asked for an interview. And before I went to the interview, I called up the National Federation of the Blind Job Bank, found out there were operators working in Erie doing the job that I wanted to do, got the name of the operator that was doing the job, asked her how she was doing it, asked her who had adapted her job, and when I went for my job interview, I had all that information with me, and I was hired in 1995. However, I did not start my job until 1996 because it took about 10 months for them to figure out, yes, that I could do the job and how I was going to do it, and they went to Pennsylvania to check to make sure, yes, that these operators were doing the job. It took 10 months of waiting when I was not sure that I was going to get that job. And my interview was in November of 95. I did not actually start until September of 1996.
That's quite a story. And I'm sure people have noted this, that with all this searching for employment, trying this, trying that, you had these personal trials in your own home with your son having cancer and eye problems, and most people would have been discouraged or thrown in the towel, but not Maria. Not Maria. Now, you said that someone was already working at the phone company as when you applied. And so you studied what they were doing and other people were doing in Pennsylvania, and that's how you were hired to be is this correct? A directory assistance operator. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's directory assistance operator, but I should set the record straight. I work for Southwestern Bell. I work for Southern New England Telephone Company, which is a subsidiary of Southwestern Bell, SDC, not Verizon. And I only do Connecticut calls at this moment. There is a little division that does national calls, but that's I don't do that. I only do Connecticut calls, and I do area codes, and I do that kind of thing. But it's 411 directory assistance.
Okay. This is quite interesting. Especially the computer self-teaching that you did. You started with that Apple. You realized that the PC was coming on strong. You bought an IBM machine, as you said, and you taught yourself. Now, did the rehabilitation services in Connecticut, what assistance did they give you in gaining technical expertise on the PC?
Nada. Zilch, zero. I bought my computer. I bought my JAWS. They came with a tutorial. I met with the tutorial, spoke to friends. They didn't do anything for me because they had paid for my training as a vendor, and they had paid for my training as a medical transcriber. So they weren't going to do anything else for me.
Yeah. you'd got their help, and you didn't stick with it, so when you went off into something else, they weren't going to help you at all. So you did it on your own, and I think that's a very important point to make. Now, let's get into the job itself, Maria, how it's done, how you do it. And don't assume we know anything about it. Take us step by step. You said you use JAWS. What other programs do you use at Verizon to do your job?
All right. First thing, I should say that the phone company bought every piece of equipment. They paid for the training. They paid for all the equipment. They paid for all the accommodations. The phone company paid for everything. The state did not pay for anything. However, the state did get the credit for my closure because I was still a client. So they patted themselves on the back and got a very competitive placement. All right. The only thing that I use different on my job is a DeckTalk speech synthesizer, which is an external speech synthesizer with the keypad that has like 16 keys or 18 keys or whatever, and the little electronic unit that everything plugs into, the keypad and the computer plugs into. But that's the only thing that I do differently. And what happens is, let me unkey here so that I don't wake up. Okay, what happens is, I have a headset that with one ear I hear the customer, and with the other ear I hear the speech synthesizer. So the first thing that happens is I hear in my right ear, I say, good morning, what city please? The customer will say, New Haven. And I type in New Haven, and they'll say, I want the phone number for Lenny Jones. So I type in Jones, type in L, I'll say, do you have an address, if they have an address. And these are all in different fields. I have to, you know, the name field, the last name field, the first name field, the address field, and the city field. So I filled in the city, the first name, the last name, and the first letter of the first name. Let me unkey here for a minute. And if they give me a street, I put in a little bit of the street. And then the screen will start telling me matches that the database, and if I find an exact match, I only have to listen to one line. But if I find a lot of L. Jones that live on different streets, or maybe, you know, I have to listen to this thing line by line by line, whereas the sighted operators can see the whole screen right in front of them. The screen has 24 lines, so I have the possibility of having to listen to as many as 24 lines. Whereas, of course, the sighted operator has that advantage of, you know, looking a lot quicker than I can listen. But on repeat calls, I have memorized a lot of things. And so what happens is when you find your match, you call the designator. Each listing has A, B, C, and D. Let's say there's four listings for L. Jones. And if I find the right one is line C, I send line C. I say, have a nice day. And they hear the recording. S-N-E-T. The number is blah, blah, blah. And so then I hear a beep, and I start all over again.
So once you find the name you want, or you think is the match that the person asked for, you hit that button, and then the recording comes on and gives them the number. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. But we're getting more and more complicated now. Now people will give me a number, and they say, what address goes with this number? And that's a little harder, because now that I enter in the number, now I have to give them the name of the person and the address of the person. And we're doing area codes, we're doing zip codes, and we're doing, you know, more things than that was done before. We got more to do now instead of just giving out numbers.
Okay, you said that your sighted colleagues can look at those 24 lines on that screen and do it faster. But isn't it true, Maria, that you have a very high productivity rate in your job, one of the highest in that office, even with your handicap?
Yes, I do. And it's not so much that I'm so good. It's that they just don't push themselves. The sighted people don't push themselves. They don't have any reason to. And I am 100% of the office, 95 to 100% of the office at all times. In other words, if the average is 15 seconds, I can maintain 15 seconds, and I have done more than 15 seconds. I maintain, in other words, I'm keeping up with the office. So that if the average is 15 seconds per call, I'm keeping right up with them.
Yeah, this is a very interesting point you made. They have the ability, but they're not using it to the maximum. You have the ability, and you are using it close to the maximum, disposing of these calls in less than 15 seconds, and then moving on to the next one. Now, that's a pretty stressful job, is it not? You said you do it in a split shift. Tell us about that.
For me, the job is extremely stressful because there's no way of stopping the calls. Well, you can stop the calls, but every single keystroke that you make, the computer will record so that if the supervisors look at your record, they will see that you stopped the calls or you wasted time, you know, between calls or whatever. So I never stop the call. And the calls just come one after the other. If you only take 8 seconds, boom, the next call's there. If you took 15 seconds, boom, the next call is there. It is a very stressful job. I am never relaxed. I memorize a lot of things so that cuts my time. And the way that I handle the stress is, one of the nice options we have is we can do what is called a split shift. And that is, the beginning operators have to do it, but I'm senior enough now that I don't have to do it, but I choose to do it. And how it works is, I work in morning for 3.5 hours, have a 5.5 hour break, which is the longest break you can have, and then I'll go back in the evening and finish my 7.5 hour shift. In other words, I work 3.5 hours in the morning, have a 5.5 hour break where I can unwind, relax, take a nap or whatever, go back and finish my 4 hours in the evening. And that maintains my sanity.
Yeah, and I think people should understand, you've been doing this for 4.5 years. Every day except for maybe a sick day here and there or a vacation day. And that is truly outstanding. That is amazing, really. I mean, I hope people have heard this, that these calls just keep pouring in, unrelenting. And you have to come up with the information, and you're being monitored. Every key punch, every keystroke is being monitored. If the supervisor wants to check on what Maria is doing at any given time, they can do that. That's pressure. That is stress. There's no question about it. Now, you say you help yourself by memorizing things. What things do you memorize that the other operators are not memorizing? They're just reading it off the screen. How do you help yourself that way? How does your superior intelligence work in this job?
Well, I have a memory like an elephant, and I'm beginning to look like one. But what happens is, let's say repeat calls like Yale New Haven Hospital. I know that the main number for that is on line E. There are four other listings, but the main number is on line E. I don't even have to listen to the four other lines because I know they're there. I just hit line E, boom, it's gone. That only took me 10 seconds. I just saved myself 5 seconds that I can spend on a more difficult call.
Yes, and I'm sure there are difficult calls with strange names and strange addresses. Or the person is giving you misinformation, misspellings, wrong street addresses, wrong telephone numbers. Is that right? How do you compensate for that kind of misdirection?
I'm talking to potential customers. Be kind to the operator. Don't tell them Michael's. Michael's what? Michael's restaurant, Michael's arts and crafts, Michael's paint store. You know, I get this kind of stuff all the time. Operator, an orange, I want Michael's. But most of the time I know they want Michael's arts and crafts, so I'll say Michael's crafts, yeah, you know. They'll say, we get a lot of wrong things. They'll say, I don't know, wood bin, when it's really wood bin. You know, we have to do a lot of interpreting. We have to do a lot of interpreting. I get a lot of rude customers. How did you get that job? Or if I knew how to spell, I wouldn't have called you, or whatever. But we have to do an awful lot of interpreting, and we have to lead the customer by the hand, you know. But that we have a little trick. When they ask for a big place, we always say, "Would you like the main number?" Or like if you ask for a car dealership, we'll say, "Would you like sales?" We lead them to give them an idea of what to ask for. If they don't want sales, they can say service. But we don't have to say sales, service, parts, Lincoln, Ford, Mercury, blah, blah, blah. Say sales, and that gets them thinking, what exactly is it that they want? So we don't have to sit there and listen to them, you know, thinking about what they want.
Yeah, I think I've been one of those people that you've led along when I've wanted a number of a particular establishment, and the operator said sales or service, sir. And I can see how you can lead them, and some of us do need that leading. There's no question about it. Maria, you certainly have had a varied and full life, and the one thing that stands out in my mind, and I'm sure those of us who are listening to you stands out, is your willingness to continue trying to get employment and to prepare for it, even when the, quote, agencies weren't willing to help you. That is courage, that's guts, that's success. And I think you ought to be commended for the life you have led, being a mother with children who have been sick, the rejection, and still keep coming back. And as I said at the top, this is not, now it's become your native language, English, but it wasn't. What a burden that must have been in the early years. And I think you really deserve not just one pat on the back, but several for doing what you have done and what you continue to do. Now, in this job that you have now, obviously that experience you had with the stand was probably a little more useful than you thought, because you're dealing with the public every day, as you said, the rude people, the imprecise people, the misdirection you get, so that all helped you achieve what you've achieved today. What do you aspire to now, outside of keeping your job and retiring? Do you aspire to another kind of a job, or just, you know, finishing out with Verizon?
Well, you know, I like the job. I really do. And I have to keep it now. My aspiration is to keep it, because I'm afraid that someday it's going to be an automated system. Massachusetts is already an automated system, where you're talking to a computer. In New York, it's an automated system, where you're talking to a computer. I'd like to be able to keep my job so that when they automate here in Connecticut, I hope that I have enough seniority to keep my job. But I also would like to do something, like, I'd like to do national listings. I'd like to be able to do national listings and do different things, and I'm hoping that that'll come. But I like my job, I'm happy, I'm doing it well, and I would like to keep it as long as I possibly can.
Well, that seems reasonable. And now, you've used JAWS since you got the job. Which version of JAWS are you using now, and how is that working in comparison? Have you tried other screen reading programs?
Well, I to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not really sure. I'm sure they're using JAWS, and I know they're using DECA, but it's such a restricted database that all the fields come up automatically, and I have no knowledge of how it works or anything like that, other than that it's all self-contained. I did have to get my database adapted when Y2K came along, because our computer system was antiquated, and they had to buy a new system. And the adaptive person that had adapted my job in 1996 had to come back in 2000 and redo it. But it wasn't it wasn't that much of a change or anything like that. So what version of JAWS it is, I don't know. But it's working well, and I feel limited by the technology. I know that if I could see And if I had that job, that I would be, you know, I would be maybe doing 13 seconds, which is doable by credit operators if they want to push themselves. But for me to keep 16 or 15 when the average is 15, I'm not complaining, and either are they. And something else I should say, that a lot of the sighted people abuse they have what is called step outs, and they can step away from their computers and go and do whatever they want to do. And again, that is measured on the computer. Anytime you're away from the computer, but they are allowed to do it. And in the 4 years that I've been there, I don't think I've taken 10 step outs. As a result, the company appreciates the fact that I don't abuse company time. So whenever I need any time, like a sick day or, you know, any kind of time that I need, I get without any questions.
Well, that's good to hear that the company does see you and does hold you as a valued employee. That's good. And you've earned that. They didn't give you that, learn that you are a valued employee because you are there all the time and you're not goofing off and stepping out and having a smoke or whatever the other ladies are doing. Now, can you think of any experiences you've had at any of these jobs you've held that were either amusing or embarrassing? Could you come up with something like that? I don't want to put you on the spot. If you can't, then we'll just move on to something else.
Well, I've had some bad experiences at the courthouse where, you know, people give me a $1 bill and tell me it was a 10. You know, that was pretty bad. And at the courthouse, I thought that was pretty bad. And I get my drunks. And I had one customer ask me, you know, could I recommend some adult, you know, sex bookstores and stuff like that at the phone company. So I every once in a while, you know, I get some funny requests and, you know, but, yeah, you know, they, like I said, I have a lot of different kinds of customers and, you know, some of them aren't very nice and, sometimes I get very angry and I have to, you know, really be very careful because we are monitored all the time. And if I feel I'm going to lose my grip, I just send the person over to the supervisor and have the supervisor handle that person. We have one very bad guy in Greenwich who his whole purpose in life is to aggravate operators. And every time I get him, he gives me the shakes. He literally gives me the shakes. And he is very intimidating. And I get him about every 6 months, and he just scares me to death.
Yeah, I guess there's weirdos everywhere, and they make an occupation of being weird. I want to ask you one other thing, because I want to leave some time here for the listening audience to ask some questions. How do your other fellow employees, how do they treat you? How do they react to you?
Well, everybody knows me. Everybody says hello. I think they're amazed that I'm able to keep up with them, and I think some of them, I had somebody say, and I wasn't sure if this was a compliment or not, that you know, that the reason why I had such good time is because I didn't take any guff from any of the customers. I didn't take any nonsense, and I'm not sure if that was a compliment or if that was a criticism, because they were talking about my time and how I have good time and I'm outdoing some of the sighted operators. I'm not sure how they feel about that, because I have better time than they are, and I've got better time than some operators that have been there for 20 years, but at this point they don't give a darn, you know, because I don't think anything's going to happen to them after 20.
Well, then you what you're saying, if I heard it right, is they're polite, reserved, but they're not terribly friendly.
You know, I've never gone skiing with them, or I've never been. They're okay, but they're not my friends. I can't say that I have any friends at the phone company.
This is the kind of thing where after you get off of work, they say, "Hey, Maria, let's go out here for something to eat or a drink." Come on.
No, I think they're you know, they're okay, but I can't say that I have any friends.
Do you think that's because of your blindness or because of your well, you're because you're such a valued employee by the company.
No, part of the reason is because I work the split, so I don't get to spend any time with them at lunch or anything like that.
I see. Would there be anything you'd like to say?
I think mostly because of my blindness, but I think maybe a little bit of the other. But also, I really don't... Lou, if I could say one more thing. I really don't like sitting with... One more thing. A lot of the people, all they do is criticize the company. They just criticize the company, and I think the company's been good to me, so I'm not too critical.
Yeah, I understand that. Yes, certainly. Before we get to the question, is there anything you'd like to say that I haven't asked or I sloughed over or minimized? Or you know, I want to give you every opportunity to say whatever you want to say about your life or your jobs or the present job, whatever.
Well, you know, I just feel that people should keep trying and... I was very discouraged for the 10 months that I waited, and I had to call once a week to check on the status of the job, but I think it was my persistence calling every single week. You know, I'd say, I'm not going to do it anymore. But if I hadn't, they would have thought I didn't want it. And sometimes persistence pays. And do things that you don't want to do, and accumulated experience maybe will help you get the job you want eventually if you keep trying. And I don't know, you know, I'm just so glad that I finally got the job that I was meant to have, and I'm glad that I was able to work up to it or whatever, and a lot of it is timing, being at the right place at the right time and having the knowledge that they want and all that. I don't know what else to say, but don't give up, keep trying.
Yeah, I don't think I could add much to that, but persistence, but you did prepare for the break. Yeah, you were lucky. The job opened up, but you were prepared. And if you weren't fully prepared, you did become fully prepared to hold that job when the 10 months of waiting were over. And I think that put it very well, Maria. And I want to really thank you for coming on here, giving me your time, sharing your life experiences with me, the good ones and the bad ones. And you've had both. And I really appreciate it, and I hope it's been instructive and interesting to the people who are listening. Now, if anyone would have a question or two for Maria, I think he would be willing to answer those.
Hi, Steve. How can I help you?
Hi, Maria. Thanks. I'm Steve in Richmond, Virginia. I was wondering, does it ever get monotonous, and how do you deal with that?
Never, 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 never. Every call is an adventure because I never know what that green is going to look like when it's all, when the beep is done. Never monotonous. I love it that way. Not for me.
Well, that's a big reason that you're such a good employee, I guess. I'm a terrible speller, and I know a lot of blind people who are. I guess you're a pretty good speller. Did you have to pass a test to get the job in spelling?
No, there is a test that is given, but it was waived for me. It was part of the accommodations. But spelling, I don't know how much of spelling is part of it, but it was a bad test. It had a lot of visual stuff.
Does someone else have a question?
I have one, Maria. It's Jennifer. I've enjoyed your talk, and I believe you don't take death. That's one of the things I like about you. A question I have is, when someone calls into 411, is their phone number identified in any way? Because now folks are billed for 411, and I wonder if the operator actually sees a incoming number.
Yeah, I have a capability. The sighted people see it right there on the screen. I have to push a special button to find what the number is. But yeah, we do have access to the number.
Hi, Maria. This is Wayne. What company do you work for, and where are they located? I kind of joined the conversation late. I used to be a 411 operator up till about 6 months ago, and I transferred to a job in the Bell South Residential Repair Center. It was an upgrade. I was curious, where are you working?
I work for Southern New England Telephone Company, a subsidiary of Southwestern Bell as well. You know, if I ever got the chance to go to 611 or 811, I might do it. But you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know how much accommodations or adaptation they'll do for me. But if they automate and I don't have any seniority, I'd like to think that they'd adapt one of those other jobs for me.
Yeah, as a 411 operator, or an ex-411 operator, I find it amazing that you're able to do it with no vision. I relied on a super-sized monitor, and my upgrade to 611, I actually find less stressful on my eyes, although it stimulates my brain a lot more. It's quite a complicated job, but I admire you for doing that 411, because it's not an easy job.
Well, you heard it from a partially sighted person. That's a compliment. Thank you.
What is 611 and 811?
611 is repair.
Sound region. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's in the Bell South region, probably, as with most of the Baby Bells, it is a residential repair service. And we basically screen calls from people with phone problems and try to troubleshoot and isolate the problem there at their premises. And if all fails, then we get a description of the trouble and send it over to the work maintenance center where it's dispatched to a technician to fix.
811 is customer service. This is where you call about your bill, where you call for order service or turn it off, or, you know, by call waiting and stuff like that. That's the main phone service, 811, here in Connecticut.
Yeah, I just tried it, Maria. We don't have 811 here. We do have 611, though.
We don't have either here in Richmond. I mean, they're different numbers.
I guarantee you, any blind person can do 611. It's a sophisticated job, but once you learn it, you got it made. When I left 411 and went to 611, what nearly cost me my job was their silly little pass-fail exam, which I failed miserably the first time out, and I did considerably better on the second time. Being a union employee, they allowed me to take it a second time, but I still failed it. And I'm not going to make the story long here, but I was poised to sue the phone company. And I told them that they better be careful because I'm covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act. They backed down and allowed me to take the test a third time. And having been in the office for 6 months, I'm proud to say that I've got veteran operators coming up to me who have been working there for many, many years, asking me how to do procedures and asking me questions about the way things should be done on the job. And that makes me feel pretty good.
Well, I think that's another object lesson that Wayne just described. He failed it twice and passed it the third time. I guess it's just that persistence that really counts in the long run. Did someone else have a question for Maria?
Well, that means we explained it very well, huh?
Exactly. I admire her determination and her to go ahead and go for what she really wanted in the long run. And she worked really hard for it. It took her a long time, but she made it, and I'm proud of her.
I'm proud of you too, Maria. You did an excellent, you're doing an excellent job. Keep up the good work.
Well, you know, God tested me, and I must have passed because he's smiling on me now.
Well, you deserve it.
And congrats to Wayne, too.
Yeah, that's right, Wayne. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
You say 611 is easy, huh? I'll have to keep that in mind. You know, but I don't want it to be monotonous. I like my job because, like I said, that's one thing it isn't. It isn't monotonous. I'm never bored.
Well, you know, I kind of fell into the 411 thing by accident. I was working at a TOPS operator. You're probably familiar with the term TOPS. It was toll assistance. And I got surplus out of a job. They closed the office down. And the only lateral transfer I could take was a 411 job. And it was scared me to death. I'm telling you, I was just frightened out of my mind going on that, taking my very first call. But I soon got into the groove. And I'm just amazed that you can do it. How do you handle, I'm sure you know what a foreign listing is, and how do you weed out the foreign listings from the local listings? Because I had a pretty rough time doing that. Our database was a mess.
Well, I'm not sure if I understand what you mean by foreign listing, because we only have Connecticut listings, and the database is pretty good. But I have different problems, like when a caption isn't read or, you know, something like that. And I say that I probably operate at about a 95% efficiency. You know, I don't, there are some calls that I absolutely have sent to the supervisor. And if I find myself taking, you know, too long a time, that's what they tell me to do, is just go ahead and send it to the supervisor. Because, you know, all I'm doing is hurting myself and providing bad service. So I'm not sure that I understand my foreign listings. But I have, if I have a lot of matches, if I have to listen to a lot of, you know, similar things, then, you know, my time will suffer. But what saves me is repeat calls, business calls, and that I can memorize the line designator of and just send them out, so that gives me time to work on the more difficult calls.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, foreign listings are similar to what you just mentioned, a lot of matches, where you pull up a city and it brings in a bunch of similar listings from other cities. But all I can say is congratulations, and I would advise any visually impaired or blind person to go for those telephone company jobs, because, man, they are really opening up right now. And especially in the residential and business repair centers, with the advent of more lines being put in, computers and data transmission equipment, then you got a lot of lines that break down and a lot of confused customers out there, and there's a lot of opportunity to help them out, and they need intelligent people in there with good customer service skills, and I think blind people definitely fit that role. They need to get in there and snatch the jobs up big time.
The benefits are good. If you do a good job, you do get appreciated, at least in my company. The other thing I do is I do a lot of talking. I ask a lot of questions. The more information you can get from the customer, the quicker you can give them what they want. And I do a lot of questioning. Can you help me out with an address? Can you help me out with this? Can you help me out with that? Do you have any idea where it's at? You know, I just do a lot of questioning.
You know, somebody asked a question about spelling, and I'm a lousy too, but we have a feature on 411 here in Bell South called the phonetics key, and what you do is you put in the way, or excuse me, you spell out the word the way a baby would spell it. You sound it out, and then if it's not the correct spelling, you depress the phonetics key, and the system searches its database and looks for anything that's similar to it, and 9 times out of 10, what you're looking for is at the very top of the list.
We're not allowed to do that. I don't know if the service, the supervisors are, but we're not allowed to use that phonetic scheme.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to bow out. I've been running my mouth. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for your contribution, Wayne. I think that was helpful. Maria, I see our time is up, and I'd like to thank you again and express my admiration for your interview and your sharing your experience with me and the people on the line here, on the net with me. And hopefully you'll continue to be successful at your job. I'm sure you will be, but you certainly have proved a number of things to us, and I think we can profit from it. Thank you, Maria.
Yes, thanks, Maria.
Thank you for asking.